welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden years. Mark Lifonier, your host for an hour of drama. Later on, it's the CBS Radio Workshop from 1957, but first, radio's pilot program of the year called Forecast, an effort by CBS Radio to produce and introduce new programs for hopes that the audience would respond well enough so they would stay on the network. This episode, a pilot for a program called Angel from July 29, 1940.
In the hour to follow, the Columbia Broadcasting System will present from New York and from Hollywood the fifth and sixth in a series of 14 new programs entitled Forecast. Forecast is a series of radio first nights, each of them meant to illustrate for your approval a different radio idea. We hope you like tonight's shows and all the Forecast programs, because if you do like them and say so, we expect eventually to be able to bring each idea to the air as a regular commercially sponsored series. Forecast number 5 from Hollywood. Loretta Young in Angel with Elliot Lewis. Angel is the dramatic chronicle of a great woman and a great cause. The woman, Ellen Carter, played by Loretta Young. The cause of service to all who need it, wherever they may be found. The American Red Cross. The time, July 1940. The scene, a comfortable upstairs sitting room in a house just off Main Street in Elmville, Illinois. Bent over a desk is a fragile, white-haired woman. She's 75, Ellen is now, but somehow you'd never think of her as being old. She turns as there's a quiet knock on the door.
Yes? Oh, come in, Jamie.
Mommy said I should say goodnight, Grandma Ellen, but I mustn't disturb you.
You're not disturbing me, child.
She said you're going to start writing something tonight. What's your writing, Grandma Ellen?
Well, Jamie boy, they're what people call memoirs.
You mean memories?
Practically.
Why?
Why, Jamie?
Why do you write them?
Well, child, I'll tell you. They're supposed to be for other people to read someday. But the real truth is, I rather like to remember.
Oh. What's that say? What you wrote there at the top of the page?
That, Jamie. That's the dedication.
The dedication?
Yes, Jamie. It says, to Bill, who gave the dream, and to Bart, who fulfilled it.
I know who Bart was. He was my grandfather who died, wasn't he?
Yes, Jamie.
But who's the first one? Bill.
Well, Bill was my grandfather.
Gosh, did you ever have a grandfather, too?
Yes, dear. A long time ago, even Grandma Ellen had a grandfather. Forever ago.
You're going to write all your memories tonight?
Oh, goodness, no, child. Just the beginning. The first chapter.
Will there be stuff about the Red Cross and all in it?
Yes, Jamie. A lot of stuff about the Red Cross, I think.
Daddy told me a whole lot of people used to call you an angel. Will your memories tell why?
Your daddy tells you too many things.
Can I read what you're going to write afterwards?
Well, someday maybe. When you're older. And now, good night, Jamie boy.
Night, Grandma. Don't forget, I get to read them.
I suppose the real beginning was in 1882, right here in Elmville. I was 18, and I'd gotten a job teaching the primary grades in the old River Street School. Then one night, early in March, the school board asked me to appear before them. I remember how thrilled I was. I thought it meant a promotion. But as soon as I arrived, I realized how wrong I was. Calvin Rawlins was chairman.
Thank you, Miss Carter. The board has met here tonight to consider your dismissal as the teacher of the River School.
My dismissal? But why, Mr. Rawlins?
Well, for one thing, you've taught your students unpatriotic ideas.
Unpatriotic?
You said openly that the founders of this nation practically stole the land they settled from the Indians.
Oh, well, I did say something like that. But it was only to teach the children tolerance of other nations and to tell them the true sense of historic values.
There are no such ideas in the textbooks prescribed by this board, Miss Carter.
Furthermore, you've been absent from your classes all too frequently the last few months.
Well, that is true, gentlemen, and I'm sorry about it. But there's been so much sickness this winter, and so many people had no one else to care for them. Is that all, sir?
Well, Miss Carter, we,
It isn't all. Neither of these reasons you've mentioned is the real reason. I can see that in your faces.
Miss Carter, is it or is it not true that you went down the river last Saturday night to Cairo alone and unchaperoned with a young man of this community?
Yes, that's true. I went to a dance there with Perry Gibson.
And is it also true that you did not arrive home that night? That you did not arrive, in fact, until 11 o'clock the following morning? Well, Miss Carter, we're waiting for an answer.
You needn't vote on my dismissal, gentlemen. You needn't bother, because I'm resigning. You see, I couldn't think of teaching any longer for a school board with minds like yours. Go away, please. Leave me alone.
It's Bill, Ellen.
Oh, Bill.
Crying, huh?
Of course not.
Sure you are. And why shouldn't you? When you can't hit somebody who needs hitting, you gotta let off steam some ways. Being a woman, I reckon your way is to cry, huh?
You heard what happened?
Yes, I heard. And if I didn't think it'd make it worse for you, I'd be down there right now measuring that Calvin Rawlins for a tombstone. And all the rest of that school board, too. Narrow-minded, pigeon-chested bunch of caterwauling hypocrites.
Oh, Bill, I'm so glad you're here.
Now, look, Lister. You just forget about this business. The people of this town know you, and they'll see to it that you get your job back.
I don't want it back.
What?
I'm going away, Bill. Tonight.
Oh, you are?
Yes.
Where?
Oh, I don't know, and I don't care either, just so I'm out of this town by morning.
I see. Well, I reckon I was wrong.
Wrong?
Yeah. I thought you and me always saw things just the same, but we don't. Because a Carter don't usually run away from a fight.
Oh, it isn't just what happened tonight, Bill. It's everything. This town and the people. I hate my life in Elmville. Could you have stayed in a place like this when you were my age?
No, I reckon not. But there's a mite or so of difference. For one thing, you're a girl.
Oh, yes, I'm a girl. And so my life is cut and dried for me. I've got to stay in a dead town, full of dead people, and conform to their stupid, narrow-minded dead convention.
But, Ellen, you...
Oh, yes, I have a choice, all right. Sure, I have. I can either go on teaching until I'm a dried-up old maid, or I can marry someone like Perry Gibson in the church at Walnut and Main Street, and then go to St. Louis on my honeymoon, and then come back here and forget that any place ever existed except Elmville, Illinois.
It don't sound too attractive the way you put it.
Oh, Bill, why did I have to be born too late?
Too late.
Yes, but all the excitement was gone. In the world, I mean. Why, 50 years ago, this town wasn't like this, Bill. The whole country was different. There were some frontiers left then, and it was no disgrace to want to go and find them, even for a girl.
Pretty bent on really doing something with that young life of yours, aren't you, Ellen?
Why shouldn't I be? Is there any law against a woman being of some use to herself and humanity? Bill, does everything worthwhile have to be done by men? Oh, I want some excitement in life, some adventure. But what chance is a girl in 1882? I tell you, Bill, the whole world's gone stale. It's dull and stupid and colorless, and I loathe living
hold
in it.
Hold on there. Hold on, schoolmarm. You're kind of pouring on the language there, aren't you?
Well, I...
And as far as the world running down, I ain't so sure. But I know how you feel about getting away. In fact, maybe we can do something about it.
Bill...
Yeah, you just kind of keep that temper of yours in hand and stick around till you finish this here battle with Rawlings and his dribble-mouth school board. And if you still got as much wanderlust in your bones, well, I got a few $100 cashed away. Maybe I can stake you, just as one horizon chaser to another, eh?
Oh, Bill, what did I ever do to deserve a grandfather like you?
You had sense enough to call me Bill instead of Grandpa.
Thank you.
said that
Ellen,
you...
I came just as soon as I heard.
As soon as you... Oh, you mean about the board meeting?
Yes. And I'm going to Calvin Rawlings myself and tell him the truth about what happened.
Are you, Perry? I can just hear you saying it. You see, Mr. Rawlings, the reason Ellen and I stayed out all night was because I got so drunk at the dance that Ellen had to drive the carriage back and she didn't know the road, so we got lost. Oh, yes, and I can also hear Calvin Rawlings laughing.
Ellen, will you marry me?
Perry.
I mean it, Ellen. I guess I love you more than I could ever love any girl. And I'd do my best to be a good husband. Honest, I would.
Well, I'm sure you would. And it's awfully nice of you to ask me. But...
Well, will you?
Well, I don't know. You see, I'll have to think it over, and I'll tell you. I'll let you know it at the party, huh?
The party?
Yes.
You're not still going to give that St. Patrick's party after tonight.
Why not? Oh, now look, Perry. You don't often get a chance to find out who your real friends are. But we're going to find out, both of us. Nothing on earth could stop me from giving that party. What time is it, Bill?
It's after nine.
Oh, dear.
Oh, but that don't mean a thing, Ellen. The way it's been raining these last 4 days, people are just naturally bound to be late to a party. Roads are bad and all.
Maybe they're just not coming.
Be quiet, Lois.
Oh, why should she, Mother? What she says is true.
No, Ellen, don't upset yourself.
Sure, sure. What's one St. Patrick's party more or less anyway? Besides, I tell you, it's a storm. Well, I wouldn't go out in it myself. In fact,
Dan, Ellen, listen.
Somebody's calling.
It's Perry.
Ellen.
Oh, hello, Perry. Well, you can see what a success our party is.
Your party? What are you talking about? Doesn't anybody know?
No, what?
How about the river?
Well, you mean it's been rising? Sure, I knew that. Pretty near flood stage, they said this morning.
Near it? It's over flood stage.
Oh.
And what's worse, it's already out of its banks up on North Bend. The water's flooding over into Ross Creek.
Ross Creek?
Oh.
Well, that'll put water on both sides of the town. Turn the place into an island. Well,
that's why I came. You've all got to get out. There's still a bridge across Ross Creek that it won't hold much longer. My carriage is outside and...
Oh, Perry, wait a minute. Does everyone else in town know about this? I mean, about being cut off?
Well, how do I know? I came right here.
Don't ask questions, Ellen. Let's get going. Lois, get coats
and
blankets.
But how can we go without warning the other people? What about the patients in the hospital and the men in the jail and the orphanage, Mother?
Gosh, Ellen, we can't think of other people now. The bridge may be out before we get to it as it is.
Ellen, don't argue.
There's no argument, Mother. It's all settled. Perry and I are going into town and...
What?
Well, we've got to get the people out, and if we can't, we'll see and help them fight the flood. Yeah, will you take Perry's carriage and drive Mother and Lois to where it's safe?
Ellen, wait. It's crazy to do that.
Crazy? For us to go and help people?
But there's no telling how high the water will come. The town might even be wiped out. And besides, my folks are waiting for me across the bridge. They need me. After all, a man has a duty to his own folks, hasn't he?
Why, of course he has, Perry. You go right ahead to where you'll be safe with your folks. I'll go into town by myself.
Oh, no, you won't. No, you won't. Not without me.
Oh, no, Bill, no, you can't. After all, you're...
Who says I can't? Well, I was battling bigger floods than this one before you were even thought of. Well, what are the rest of you standing around for? Go on, get in that carriage and get going. Ellen and me have got work to do. Right smart to get them all in here. And this hymn singing idea wasn't so loco either. First thing you know, this bunch is going to forget all about being marooned in the middle of a flood.
Oh, no, they're not, Bill. And we can't let them forget. That water's getting higher every minute and there's so much to do. The work has to be organized.
Well, then, what are you waiting for?
Bill, will they really go on taking orders from me, do you think?
Look, youngster, being a natural leader has got nothing to do at all with age or sex. It's something you've got or you haven't got. And people in trouble are the first ones to recognize it. Now, if you're going to organize this scared bunch of jackrabbits, go on, get on with it. You said yourself you wanted a chance to really accomplish something. Well, here it is, right in your lap. Now, let's see what you're going to do about it.
Listen, everybody. Listen. Listen, everybody. We've got a lot of work to do, and it must be done quickly.
Now, you know as well as I do that the river's still rising. And this church and the houses on this street are all on the highest ground. So we've got to make our stand right here. Now that means getting water and food and medicines and blankets from wherever we can. We may be cut off for days here, but we'll be all right if we just have enough supplies. Now, we've all got to divide up and all do different jobs. Now, Jed Mason, look, it's up to you to collect blankets, and I want you to get
Who says so? Who gave you a call to tell us what to do?
Nobody did. But somebody's got to make decisions around here, and I haven't noticed any of you men doing anything but talk.
You're right, Ellen Carter. Jed, shut your mouth and do as you're told.
Oh, yes, Emma.
Thanks, Mrs. Mason. And I'd like you to get sort of a hospital in the vestry. Some of the children and Mrs. Johnson are hurt, you know, and...
I sure will.
Oh, thanks. Tom and Clem,
Look,
it's your job to get food. Get to the store somehow and bring out all the food that you can carry, see? And Mrs. Tompkins, look, it's up to you to take charge of the children. The first thing to do is get them to sleep. And all the rest of you, if you haven't got a job to do, then find one. Everybody's got to help, you understand? Just rest. It's going to be all right now. It's going to be all right. There. I think she'll sleep a while now.
Sure, and you've got the gift you have, Ellen Carter. I kept trying all night to get her to sleep. And you do it in 5 minutes. But now...
Miss Owen! Miss Owen!
Shh, Mickey, be quiet.
A boat, Miss Owen, from downriver.
Oh,
not big enough to take us off. Just a little boat. And there's some fellow on it yelling something about supplies.
Well, I'll see about it.
Are you coming out, Miss Owen?
Well, yes, certainly I am.
Ellen? Here you are. Just coming for you. Looks like we got company.
Yes, so I see.
Go there and make my boat pass. Good morning. Who's in charge here?
I am.
You are?
Yes.
My name is McPherson, Dr. McPherson.
Oh, how do you do, Doctor?
I've come up from Cairo to take charge. All right, so you have cases of food and bottles of water. Good. How many have you isolated here?
54.
54.
Yes.
Well, there's food here to feed that many for a week, and a supply boat will be upriver in 3 days. Well, I'll just take half of what you have on hand. You men, I'll need your help in loading. Put those heavy boxes in the bow, and right now...
Now, just a minute, Dr. McPherson. Those men aren't loading any boxes anywhere. We collected these stores, and we're going to keep them.
Look, girl, don't bother me. I'm in a hurry. You heard me. Put that box aboard.
Huh? Don't touch it, Clem.
All right, then I'll load the boat myself.
Oh, no, you won't, Clem. Stop him.
You bet I will. So you're just going to take things, are you, mister?
If I have to, yes.
Well, I say you ain't.
All right, my friend, we'll have it your way then, like this.
Oh! Clem! How dare you hit him? And who do you think you are to come here without so much as a buy your leave and start running things?
Stand aside, girl. You're in my way.
I'm in your way?
Now, look, miss. I have a prejudice against going around hitting young women. But if you choose to interfere with my job, I wouldn't let personal feelings hinder me. I was sent up here to get help to people who need it, especially families isolated on farms farther up the valley. I'm an official field agent of the Red Cross.
Red Cross? But that can't be. The Red Cross is only to help the wounded in the wartime.
Oh, is that so?
Yes.
Well, for your information, miss, there's no longer any such limitation. The Red Cross serves now whenever and wherever it's needed, in peace or in war. And this little episode right here is going to be whichever you choose to make it.
Whichever?
What do you say?
Oh, very well. Clem, you and some of the others help Dr. McPherson load his boat.
Yes, sir.
Good. When they're through, I'll need one of the townsmen to go with me. Someone who knows the farms hereabouts and where they'd likely need help the most.
I'll go with you.
I said I wanted a man.
I said I'll go with you.
You know, maybe it's not such a bad idea. You don't weigh so much, so I can carry more supplies. All right, men, let's get her loaded.
All right.
Channel turns just ahead there, Dr. McPherson, a little to the right.
I could tell that myself, thank you.
It would have to start to rain again. Do you think it'll raise the flood level?
Not likely. The crest has already passed on downriver.
Oh, there's the Pinkett farm just ahead. You see, they're waving to us from the roof. We can take them off now.
With perhaps a few hundred families farther on to get food, too, we'll do nothing of the sort. How far would we get taking on passengers at every stop?
Well, I just thought...
Well, don't think. Leave a man's job for a man to do. Hello! Hello, ahead there! Pinkert Farm, Sloan, Walsh, Myers, where's the next place? You. I said, where's the next place?
You know everything else, Doctor. I thought you'd find it yourself by instinct.
Thanks for the information. You're certainly a great help to me.
I think so. The Norbach farm is around the next bend.
My wife is all right here, Doctor, yeah?
Yes, she's all right, Norbach. You stay in there with her.
What is it, Doctor?
Bad luck, that's what it is. A baby.
A baby? Bad luck?
Why did she have to pick now? I'll have to stay here for the delivery while other families upriver are without food or medicine.
But they won't be.
I suppose you think you can run that boat alone.
No, Doctor, but you can.
Look, Miss Carter, you don't understand. The baby
I understand perfectly. I'll stay with Mrs. Norbach. I've helped deliver babies before. I guess this time I can manage alone.
You're not afraid?
Supposing I am. What difference would it make? You go ahead, Doctor. I'll be all right. You can stop here for me on your way back.
I'll do that. Oh, and Ellen.
Yes?
Good luck.
Thank you, Doctor.
You're good, Ellen. You're too good. She is a fine baby, no?
She's a beautiful baby, Mrs. Norbach. Even Dr. McPherson will have to admit that, won't he?
Did Doctor come back today?
Yes, he should be here sometime today. The river's nearly down to normal again, and he'll be stopping for me on his way back to Elmville. You'll be all right by yourself now?
With so much help as you have given me. Your fine nurse, Nina Flicker. To one in pain, you are like angel. My baby. If Eric say ya, I name her Ellen for you. You're not mad, maybe?
Oh, Mrs. Norbach. It would even make me like the name for myself. I never have before, you know. Is dancing really so painful to you, Dr. McPherson?
Painful?
Yes, you're frowning as though it were. You know, as Elmville's guest of honor at this dance, you should at least look as though you're enjoying yourself.
No, it's all nonsense. Except for this dance, I could have left for St. Louis this afternoon. When my work's done in one place, I like to get on to another. No, what's so humorous?
You, Doctor. You know, I don't think you've smiled twice since you came here. One would think we arranged this plot on purpose just to bother you. In fact, I think that... Doctor, I hope you know that you're dancing us away from the dance floor.
I prefer the balcony out here.
What makes you think that I wanted to come out here?
I wanted to.
Oh.
This is goodbye, Ellen. I'm going tonight, upriver. But before I left, I wanted to... Well, it's this. I wanted you to have it here. It's not much. Just a bit of a Red Cross insignia.
But it's gold, and it has your name on it.
Miss Barton gave it to me last year.
Clara Barton gave it to you? And now you want to give it to me?
You see, when I've been wrong about someone, I like to say so. I was wrong about you, Ellen, from the first.
Were you?
Yes. Ellen.
Doctor, you needn't have done that. I'd have kissed you if you'd asked me to.
I'm not the kind who asks.
No, I guess you're not. Do you realize that you haven't even told me your first name?
It's Bart.
Bart.
Ellen, listen to me. There are things I've got to say and you've got to understand.
I'll try.
You said I'd been unpleasant.
Yes.
I have. And do you know why? Because of you. You're the girl who wasn't supposed to exist for me. I told myself 1,000 times I didn't want you to exist. That was because I was afraid of finding you.
Afraid? Why, it's hard to think of you being afraid of anything.
I was.
Bart, are you trying to say that you could never let any woman mean more to you than your job?
That's it exactly. I'm a queer combination, Ellen. There are 2 people in me, I guess you'd say.
I know. One who has the one to listen and seeks adventure. And the other who wants his life to be one of real service. The work you're doing means everything to you, doesn't it, Bart?
It means so much. I don't know how to tell you. If you'd ever met her, then maybe you could understand.
You mean Clara Barton?
She is the Red Cross, Ellen. She's the fountainhead of all it means, of all it ever will mean. And to be working with her now when the whole thing is really beginning... It's
like starting on a crusade. A crusade that you're sure in your heart can never fail. Oh, you're so lucky, Bart. You do belong in that crusade, and you have your share in it. And you mustn't let any person in the world take it away from you.
Good night, Ellen.
Bart!
Good night. Goodbye.
Bart! Oh, Bart!
Dad, Dad, where have you been? We've looked everywhere for you.
What is it? What's all the excitement?
It's Ellen.
She's gone, Dad. Hmm? She's at the station now. She packed this morning and she's taking the 1 o'clock train for St. Louis to join the Red Cross. She'll listen to you, Dad. You've got to get down there and stop her.
Your mother thinks I came down here to stop you. But you know better than that, don't you?
Yes, of course, Bill. And I'm glad you came. I hated to miss our goodbye.
Look, Ellen, we've never lied to each other about your going to St. Louis. Is it really the Red Cross or is it the man?
It's both, Bill. And I'm not even sure myself which is more important. I only know that if I've got a chance for happiness anywhere, it's there. You see, I let him go, Bill, without telling him that everything he wanted in life was everything that I wanted. And, Bill, when he knows that, maybe it'll make a difference.
Well, don't, he's a plumb darn fool. Oh. Well, there you go, youngster. God bless you.
Goodbye, Bill. And thanks for being you. Oh, Bill.
Yes?
Bill, you know, maybe I was wrong about those frontiers being gone. Maybe there still are some left and a new kind. And Bart and I are going to find them. Goodbye, Bill.
Broadcast represents the first episode of a series which we hope may eventually reach the air as a weekly feature under commercial sponsorship. Succeeding episodes will follow the further romantic adventures of Loretta Young as Ellen and Elliot Lewis as Bart, with Cy Kendall as Bill. The series will trace, too, the development of a great international institution, the Red Cross. If you want to hear more of Ellen's story, write to CBS and tell us so. The eventual broadcasting of Angel as a series depends to a large extent on your expressed interest and your applause.
Forecast on Tuned to Yesterday from July 29, 1940 on CBS. A program meant to spur interest in potential new series for the network. And if you had great success coming from Forecast, like the comedy Duffy's Tavern, Hop Along Cassidy, which had already enjoyed fame in novels and in movie form, and the most famous would be Suspense. The episode featured was The Lodger, directed by Alfred Hitchcock. About a year and a half after its debut on Forecast, it would remain on CBS Radio for 20 years strong. This is an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LaVonier. Now time for the CBS Radio Workshop with the story Grief Drives a Black Sedan from September 1st, 1957.
Penny, for those thoughts.
Oh, I was thinking I'm glad we're going home, Roger. I hope this summer has given us both ample time to think this thing out.
Well, actually, darling, we have too much invested in this marriage. 10 years cannot be dispelled by one summer.
Well, that isn't exactly what I meant, but... Oh, let's listen to the radio, shall we?
I hope we've had an end to this sulking and...
What was that, Roger? Felt like we hit something.
Nonsense, I ran off the road.
Oh, Roger, please, slow down. Roger, listen. Sounds like a woman screaming. Oh, please, please, let's go back. I'm sure you've hit something.
I didn't hear anything, Kay. I'm sure we didn't hit anything.
This is the CBS Radio Workshop, the theater of the mind dedicated to man's imagination. Our story, Grief Drives a Black Sedan, stars Alice Frost and Lee Vines. Written, produced, and directed by D. Engelbach.
Roger. We should have gone back.
Kay, none of your hysterics now. Please, we...
I'm sure we must...
Oh, just be quiet.
You realize how fast you were going?
Yes, officer. I was going 40 miles an hour, and that doesn't really seem like an excessive amount of speed to me.
It is in a 25-mile zone. Although you can't see it from the road, this area is quite thickly populated. There are always children about. I see a driver's license.
Hey, Tom. Look here a moment.
Okay.
Roger, do
Shut
you think
up,
we really...
Shut up, Kay. There's nothing these state police would rather do than to stop a car with a New York state license. And I was only going 40 miles an hour.
I'm afraid it's more serious than that.
More serious than what?
Move over, please.
Say, what's all this about?
I'm taking you to the police barracks in Westport.
What have we done, officer?
That's for you to tell me, madam. You see, your front left fender is dented.
Is that a crime in this state?
We'll have to find out. You see, around that dent is blood.
Captain would like to see you in his office.
May I come along, Roger?
No, darling, you stay out of this. I'll find out what this is all about.
Roger, remember...
Stay out of this. I'll be back in a moment.
Sit down, please. You are Roger Wickens, 25 Park Plaza Road, New York City?
Yes, I am. What's this all about?
I'm returning your driver's license and your car registration. We've checked the New York police. You've not had any previous accident record. What happened tonight, Mr. Wickens?
What do you mean, what happened? I drove up here from New York City to take my wife home. She's been summering up here, and that's all there is to it. And I want you to stop treating me like a criminal. I was driving down Cross Highway when the police stopped me for driving 40 miles an hour.
Excuse me. Yes. Yeah. Well, keep checking. Check every hospital within 25 miles. When you finish that, check all the doctor's residents in the vicinity. Send someone to retrace Cross Highway. Yes. Well, I think you'll find somewhere... not too far from where the Wickens' car was stopped, some blood stains and possible pieces of glass. Report back as soon as possible. Yes, who? Oh, Doc's out there. We'll send him in.
Captain, what about this? Are we under arrest?
Well, there are two ways we can do this. We can technically arrest you for driving 40 miles an hour in a 25-mile zone. Or of your own volition, you can wait until all these things check out. Look, I think you're in trouble. I think you've hit somebody and run away from the accident.
Of all the stupid things that I've ever heard of, I've...
Oh, hello. Hello, Captain. Okay, what is it? Oh, excuse me.
Hello, Doc. Well, what will it be, Mr. Wickens?
I'll wait. What about my wife?
Well, she'd better wait, too.
He seems rather touchy.
Yeah. Doc, why don't you take some blood samples, run them through the lab, report back to me as soon as you can. I believe this is a case of hit and run. I want to have all my facts.
Another no-cooperation guy, huh?
That's right, Doc. They never learn, do they?
Roger, did you tell them?
Tell them what?
Oh, please, darling. Remember when we ran off the road, I told you I thought I heard a woman scream.
Kay, I did not hear a woman scream, and I did not hit anything. This is all a fantastic nightmare. It seems it started when you came up here. There was no reason for all of this. We should have gone to Europe this summer and behaved like two mature people. 10 years of marriage, and we're still trying to figure out whether or not it will work.
It's not going to work, Roger. I believe this was all for a reason tonight. I believe we're both in trouble.
Nonsense.
Roger, we must share that responsibility.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Kay, what responsibility?
The blood on the fender.
Hello. Yes. You found what? Where? Bayberry Lane. Let me get this down now. Bayberry Lane and Cross Highway. Yeah, I'm a regular Sherlock Holmes. How'd I know what? Never mind about that. No one at the house, huh? Well, you stay there. Keep calling in. No, Doc's still working. There's nothing to report here. Wickens denies everything. Okay, stay with him. Right.
You want me to send out for some coffee?
Oh, no, thank you.
Well, it's past midnight. Eddie and Joanne said they would wait at the Maroc until 1. What a wonderful homecoming party this turned out to be.
Well, you win the superficiality award for the year. Eddie and Joanne, the Maroc, the whole stupid, silly pattern. Roger, don't you realize you may have killed someone tonight?
Kay, let's stop this. This bickering, this hammering at each other. I did not hit anyone tonight. Now, starting with that premise, let's see if we can discuss intelligently our own problems.
This is not the time nor the place. Actually, Roger, there is no problem. I'm leaving you. I don't blame you, Roger. I really don't know whose fault it is. Perhaps it's mine.
Oh, no, it's mine. All I've ever done was given in to every little whim you ever had.
Have you, Roger? Oh, yes, you've given me things, money, a beautiful home, and oh, so much loneliness. Good are possessions. Oh, I know this sounds trite and very cliché. But I'm tired, Roger. We've failed. I don't know whose fault it is. I don't know where we really started to grow apart. I just want out.
Well, darling, as usual, your timing is superb. I'm up to my neck in trouble because of you.
Oh, and... please. No more of the comparisons, no more recriminations. Until we know what's happened here, let's just wait. Wait. Wait.
Yes, Tom. You did. A signed statement. Feels pretty bad, huh? Yeah, what about the charges? Mine does. Hold it a minute, Tom. Paul, have Doc call me. Yes, Tom, you were saying? Hit about 10 o'clock. Dead, huh? It's too bad. Yeah, right. Doc, drop your test. We have all we want. Okay, Tom, get back here as fast as you can. Right. Paul, bring that Wiggins guy in here.
It's 1:30. Roger, why don't you ask the captain if they found out anything?
Yes, I guess you're right. I will.
Mr. Wickens?
Yes.
Officer, what have you found out?
Mr. Wickens, the captain wants to see you.
Right.
Ten years. What do you do with 10 years? Can you write it off? Can you forget it? 10 years and you look at someone. And that someone you've known for 10 years. And you realize... Oh, this night. This long night. What have we done? 10 years. 10 whole years. What do you do with memories? Just lock them in a safety deposit box? Or do you tie them up neatly in pink ribbons and burn them? What do you do with plans? Those blueprints for the future? And what do you do with love? The community property of love, split down the middle and shared by no one. 10 years. 10 years. 10 years. Sorry, darling, I must have dozed off.
Yes, about an hour. Don't be sorry. I needed the time to think. Kay, I must talk to you.
Oh, haven't we had enough talk for one night?
Just a bit more patience, darling. A cigarette?
Roger, for heaven's sake, what's happened?
Kay... I must tell you this in my own way. And for whatever love you once had for me, please hear me out. I want you to know...
Oh, Roger, please.
I want you to know this is no plea for any kind of sympathy. I know, Kay, why our marriage failed. You see, believe me, this isn't easy. I know I'm a coward. Tonight, I did hit something. More than that, I took a life.
Roger, no.
Please, darling, let me finish this. All my life, I've been hitting and telling myself that I didn't hit. All my life. I've been running away. All my life, I've been a coward.
Oh,
I wonder how much I've lost in love, respect, friendship. I wonder how much of myself has been sacrificed so carelessly, so needlessly, because I didn't take time to stop. Go back to pick up that which I had hit. You see, darling, I guess I've always been driving 40 miles an hour in a 25-mile zone. And the ironical part about this whole thing is that the police were not going to arrest me for speeding, but merely warned me to take it easy. I guess... maybe help of any kind has always made me angry, and truth always hurt my ears.
Roger, darling, would you please...
I know I killed tonight, needlessly, carelessly. And Kay, I want you to hear this letter the captain just gave me. And I want you to know, darling, that... no more do I blame everybody else for my emptiness. To the man who killed my dog. Oh. I hope you were going someplace important when you drove so fast down Cross Highway across Bayberry Lane tonight. I hope that when you got there, the time you saved by speeding meant something to you or somebody else. Maybe we'd feel better if we could imagine that you were a doctor rushing somewhere to deliver a baby or ease somebody's pain. The life of our dog to shorten someone's suffering, that mightn't have been so bad. But even though all we saw of you was the black shadow of your car and its jumping red taillights as you roared down the road, we know too much about you to believe it. You saw the dog. You stepped on your brakes. You felt a thump. You heard a yelp and then my wife's scream. Your reflexes are better than your heart and stronger than your courage. We know that. Because you jumped on the gas again and got out of there as fast as your car could carry you. Whoever you are, mister, and whatever you do for a living, we know you are a killer. And in your hands, driving the way you drove tonight, your car is a murder weapon. You didn't bother to look, so I'll tell you what the thump and the yelp were. They were Vicky, a 6-month-old Basset puppy, white with brown and black markings. An aristocrat with 12 champions among her forebears. But she clowned and she chased and she loved people and kids and other dogs as much as any mongrel on earth. I'm sorry you didn't stick around to see the job you did, though a dog dying by the side of the road isn't a very pretty sight. In less than 2 seconds, you and that car of yours transformed a living being that had been beautiful, warm, clean, soft, and loving into something dirty, ugly, broken, and bloody. A poor, shocked, mad thing that tried to sink its teeth into the hand that had nuzzled and licked all its life. I hope to God that when you hit my dog, you had for a moment the sick, dead feeling in the throat and down to the stomach that we've known ever since. And that you feel it whenever you think about speeding down a winding country road again. Because the next time, some 8-year-old boy might be wobbling along on his first bicycle. Or a very little one might wander out past the gate and into the road the moment it takes his father to bend down to pull a weed out of the driveway. The way my puppy got away from me. Or maybe you'll be real lucky again and only kill another dog and break the heart of another family. Signed, Richard Joseph, Westport, Connecticut. Well, Kay, that's it. No charges. No rest. No.
Roger. Oh, darling. Please. Let's go home.
Ladies and gentlemen, the governor of the state of New York, Averill Harriman.
Thoughtlessness and irresponsibility go hand in hand and cause far too many tragedies on our highways. The thoughtless driver who ignores traffic regulations, hoping to get away with it, hides behind the idea, no witness, no crime. But too often, this leads down a road of final accounting. Only by constant care, courtesy, and observance of the rules of the road can you be sure of avoiding the day when grief drives your car and brings tragedy to your family or that of another. The streamlined, high-powered automobiles of today demand of us the same intelligence and care in handling that has gone into their design. This weekend and in the future, I appeal to everyone to drive carefully, drive safely, assure a happy holiday for all.
You've been listening to the CBS Radio Workshop, Grief Drives a Black Sedan, written by D. Engelbach.
The CBS Radio Workshop on Tuned to Yesterday from the 1st of September, 1957. And that brings the curtain down on this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.